From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Noel.
My name is Matt.
We had a stare off just now as to who was going to start.
I really should have said they call me Matt. Ben is in a location far away, and yet we can still feel his ever-present influence.
That's because it's ever-present. That's his very nature.
That's correct.
Omnipresent.
Yes.
He sort of hangs above us like some sort of cosmic cloud.
Again, his presence is known. We are here with special guest producer Seth. He's out there, Sethery. He's doing his thing. Wait, I'm looking at him and I'm seeing hands moving. I can't tell what it is, but it looks intricate and awesome. Wow.
Can we give him a nickname? Seth Death.
Seth Metal?
Seth Metal. Yeah, you got it. That's better.
Seth Metal. Seth, super producer.
Johnson. Is that okay? Are we allowed to divulge your last name on the show? All right, cool. He says it's fine.
Seth Metal, super producer Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
That is your new title, and it will be forevermore. Hey, we're going to do a quick check-in, you guys, because something extremely exciting is coming to us in the future. Probably not next year. Probably 2021. Matrix the Fourth is happening.
Is that what it's called? Is that the working title?
Yeah, Matrix the Fourth.
Is that like a Highlander kind of situation?
Yeah, there can only be four.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't a lot of people discount two and three? Can't we just wipe the slate and make this two?
Oh, how I wish we could, Noel.
Yeah. But, are you one of those naysayers of two and three?
I'm not a naysayer so much as close my eyes. You're right. It's close your eyes and pretend it didn't happen.
Gotcha.
It, not necessarily, because there are highlights, I should say, in all three films. But
I just remember the guy on all the TVs, the kind of Wizard of Oz character.
Yeah.
What was his name?
The Keymaster? No, the Keymaster is
the Commissioner?
The Commissioner, no. Yeah. No, the Architect.
The Architect. That was close. It was an official title of some sort.
But you guys, it's coming.
Yeah.
Officially, we're going to get more Neo, more Trinity, more everything.
Directed by Alone Wachowski.
Yeah.
Just Lana.
That's okay.
You think that's going to be all right?
Who knows?
I have a theory. It's a very obvious theory, but, you know, Keanu is like, it's the Keanuzance right now. He is on fire, blowing up the world with all these John Wick movies, doing his own stunts,
mm-hmm.
you know, just running around, shooting stuff, blowing things up, all him. And they're just like, you know what? People need another Matrix.
That's right. Well, you know, those movies are such an interesting comment on society, right?
Mm.
It's very much that science fiction commentary of the future thing.
Sure.
So I'm interested to see how it's manipulated or changed in some way.
I think I'm not as big of a Matrix head as you are, but I will say I think it's a very important film because it did a really good job of sort of pushing more heady science fiction, like Philip K. Dick kind of stuff, into the forefront of culture. And so I will forever be grateful for that. I think if it wasn't for The Matrix, we wouldn't have gotten things like Scanner Darkly and some maybe weirder franchises that wouldn't have happened. I'm having a hard time identifying any others. Can you think of any forebears to The Matrix?
No, not necessarily. All I know is that it...
Forebears came before.
Yeah, forebears. I
predecessors.
Mean, you can say a lot of those.
Oh, gosh. Those are both the same word. What's the word for the thing that comes after?
The cascade of science fiction, hard science fiction, right? That's kind of what you're talking about. But The Matrix really did popularize this kind of more heady science fiction. You're
mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for that. Wachowskis and Neos and Trinities and Morpheuses.
What are we doing today? We're not doing a Matrix episode.
We're not talking about that. Today we are officially exploring music. Music. Because the music, soundtrack, think about the soundtrack of The Matrix. But anyway, okay, we'll get away from that. How music can affect us both individually and collectively. And you know, the three of us here today, both you and Seth and I, have a very personal connection to music. And I thought we would start maybe by talking about that. How has music affected you, Noel?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing violin, and I sang in the church choir and all that stuff, and I gave up violin in favor of the electric guitar and started being in rock bands. Started doing early on kind of some metal-y type stuff, actually, and then got more into, like, Smashing Pumpkins and indie rock, and then gradually graduated more towards, like, Pavement and that kind of stuff. But I definitely got my start in much heavier music, for sure.
Nice. See, for me, I grew up playing drums in a praise band at a church, and that was all music was for me for years and years and years. And the connection that music had to religion was so close, the two were so intertwined, that it was difficult for me to even explore music outside of that because I was kind of stuck in this one place for so long, at least mentally. But, you know, as your journey, I also found my way towards lots of other genres and ended up really enjoying some of the heavier things in life, including, well, really classical heavy metal. I really
classical,
got into that.
Like Bach?
When I say classical heavy metal, I mean some of the classics from the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Sure.
I was really enjoying learning about Sabbath.
You like some Sabbath.
I very much did.
Yeah.
So again, today we're talking about music. We're talking about how powerful and highly connective music can be.
Yeah, and the act of writing it, performing it, it is a conduit between human beings, people working together to create music. And with that creation, there is thought and intention sometimes behind the actual material. The act of listening to music connects people to those creators, and it's all this kind of giant web of interconnectedness, of sharing and ideas. It almost can become its own kind of, I don't know, religion might be a strong word, but it's definitely a way of identifying with lots of different people that share the same either values or the same kind of aesthetics that you do.
No, you're absolutely right. Listening to music connects us, the listener, right, to those people who are creating it, to the, you know, the instrument choices they're making, the words that they're saying. And in a lot of ways, it can also connect us to ourselves, because music can help unlock or maybe enhance the way that we're really feeling, the way, you know, what we're really thinking, stuff that we're not allowing out into the world openly. A lot of times, music is that way to kind of have us connect back to ourselves. And, you know, a lot of us get to choose the music that we hear. Of course, that isn't true for all people in all situations, but a lot of us get to decide which vibrations and concepts stimulate our brains on a regular basis. Think about it. Our iHeart and Pandora stations, our Spotify and YouTube playlists, and these choices that we're making, they're all influenced by a ton of factors, including our location in the world, our background, you know, how we grew up, the prevailing culture, wherever that is, and almost an infinite number of other circumstances that lead to what we're listening to at any given moment, especially regularly.
Yeah, and it really can become its own kind of microcosmic cultural experience. So many times over the years, specific cultural movements within music have been associated with violence, with a particular – eliciting a particular response, or at least sometimes they're lumped in with that. Here are some examples across the world, from L.A. to Paris to New York City to Moscow. There have been several genres of hip-hop that have lyrically address the violent circumstances facing communities and individuals.
Then if you travel down to Mexico, Central America, you'll encounter these things that are called narco corridos, or drug ballads. And in these, there are explorations of people living on the other side of the law, generally within the realm of the drug trade. Now, today's episode, again, those are just two examples. There's been violence associated with music across space and time, but in today's episode, we're heading over to Northern Europe, and we're going to check out a place that's collectively known as Scandinavia, several different countries that are beautiful, sometimes frigid, just in temperature, but again, you know, you can't let yourself be influenced by just what you see on television and the way a place like Norway is shown, because that is not everything within that country. There are all kinds, there's so much diversity that occurs over there, both natural and human-made.
Yeah, despite what you might see depicted in mass media, kind of lazy depictions of this region as being one particular thing. And today, we're exploring some strange controversies, the conspiracies surrounding the Scandinavian metal scene, the spates of church burnings, and allegations of Satanism.
That's right. Satanism. Ooh. Every time we cover anything that touches on this, I don't know. There's an error about the episode just coming into the studio. I was in here earlier when Seth came in, and I was almost not startled, but I was in my own world here researching this stuff alone. And
you got spooked? Did you spook yourself?
Not necessarily spooked, but it's it feels like I'm doing something wrong, if that makes sense, just by even studying a word like Satanism.
And well, I think a lot of that might have to do with your background,
too. I think it's all connected.
Coming from a very Christian upbringing, and this is sort of like off-limit stuff because at the end of the day, I mean, there's different flavors of Satanism, right? There's, you know, legitimate pagan kind of devil worship, and then there's Satanism as more of a form of protest or like a political movement, right?
Absolutely.
So let's just, before we get into too much of that, let's first ask the question. We're going to give the facts, right? Here are the facts. What is metal?
Oh, metal? Like the genre?
No, let's talk about the material.
Okay, yeah. So metal is pretty tough to define. There are a lot of reasons for that. Music critics over the years and historians, we as in humans try very hard to categorize things like this, and specifically music, because we have industries like the radio industry and the record industry that want to put things into categories so that you can sell them and you can package them and you can talk about them in a certain way. Metal is one of those things that is – it's so spread out in what could be considered metal, types of metal. But there are a few people who have gone through and said, okay, this is how we are going to define this genre.
It's pretty cool. The term heavy metal, I didn't even know this, was first used in a way to describe music in the 60s in the song Born to Be Wild.
It's so weird to me that that was considered metal.
By Steppenwolf. The name of the band sounds more metal than the actual song. Like, to me, that just sounds like old school rock and roll kind of, you know?
Yeah.
But there's a lyric specifically in that song that says, heavy metal thunder.
Yeah, and that's according to...
Get out on the highway!
Oh, God, don't
Sorry,
sue
those,
us, anybody.
Those actually don't. Oh, right.
We're big fans. We're big fans.
We'll beep all that out.
No, we don't have to.
I think we're okay.
And also, according to Chad Bauer, the gentleman who was talking about Born to Be Wild, he notes that, quote, most consider groups like Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and Deep Purple to be the first heavy metal bands.
I can totally get behind that because, I mean, all of those bands take the tradition of kind of blues and like bar chords, but they kind of add a little chug to it and have these riffs that sort of have this like very shared aesthetic. Led Zeppelin, to me, I would argue is maybe less metal than Deep Purple and Black Sabbath. Led Zeppelin's a little more like really leaning on the blues side of it, a little bit heavier, and almost making their own kind of subgenre. But these are the experts, so who are we to judge? From there, the concept evolved and branched off into an absurd number of subgenres and genres related to the sound. While associated with or influenced by metal, you couldn't really describe them in that specific way today. For a fantastic look at the history of metal and its various genres, we highly recommend checking out this site from MIT. Yeah, MIT in Boston. And that was metal.mit.edu. It gives you a really cool kind of like, what do you say, like an interconnected kind of like chart that tracks the evolution of metal, right?
It's awesome. It's heavy metal. It's MIT Heavy Metal 101. And it says shattering eardrums since 2006. And if you read through this, it's fantastic. It gets into so many details. If you really want to, you know, learn about that, there's got to be a music show out there that you can listen to that's going to go over all this stuff, or just go to this website because it's a fantastic read. Today, we're just, you know, we're going to drill down a little bit further just into one specific genre of metal. Again, we talked about Scandinavian black metal, and that's really where we're going to remain for the rest of the episode. So go learn about metal if you wish. Come back. And then we'll continue. We'll be right here. See, I told you we were here the whole time.
We never really leave.
Hey, Seth, just checking in. How are you feeling about our discussion of metal thus far? Do you want to bring up the tritone or the devil's integer, the devil's chord change? I forget exactly what it's called. It's like the flatted fifth.
Oh, man.
You guys familiar with flatted fifth?
Sounds pretty evil.
Well, it does sound evil, and it was coined the devil's. Oh, I can't remember exactly. I didn't actually write this down. This is me pulling from old knowledge that's deep in my head somewhere. It's a musical interval, composed of three adjacent whole tones. I don't really know what that means. I just know that one of them is a flatted fifth of the three.
And is this contained in metal music?
Yeah, or? Black Sabbath in particular, if you go to that MIT site we were talking about, it talks about them using this to great effect because it almost feels like a note that shouldn't be there if you're writing a traditional song with chord changes that are in the same key or something. This flatted fifth is almost – it's eerie almost, or it throws you off a little bit.
It's sort of like the blue note in blues or jazz. It's the thing that makes it kind of sad. This is the thing that makes it kind of evil.
It makes it metal, baby.
I'm throwing up my horns when I say that. Make no mistake, though, what we're talking about is Scandinavia, which is ground zero for heavy metal. In 2013, the Swedish foreign minister Carl Bildt tweeted, quote, "Finland and Sweden seem to be the global leaders in metal bands," along with a map sourced from CIA.gov and metalarchives.com showing just how many metal bands originate in Sweden, Finland, and Norway. This is very important to remember for later. And people have actually studied Swedish and Finnish in an attempt to better understand some of their favorite metal bands.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And you guys, we need to take a quick break, and then we'll get right back in and keep this rabbit hole going. And we're back talking Scandinavian black metal. Now, according to the metal blog Invisible Oranges, sounds interesting, right? It's by Cosmo Lee. The popularity of metal in any given region can be arguably reducible to a few factors. Now, there's a researcher that was consulted here named Donald McGuire, and he wrote a paper called Determinants of the Production of Heavy Metal Music. Now, this guy, he went deep. He explored 55 different factors and found that the number of heavy metal that is produced in any given area depends on seven things. Are you ready for these? Mm-hmm. And Seth, I'm going to be looking to you to see if you agree with any of these, because it doesn't seem real to me, but there's some sand to this. Number one, the percentage of the population that is Catholic.
The percentage of the population with zero religion.
Okay, so those are two interesting, possibly opposing things. Number three, the latitude of the country.
Whether the country has a Scandinavian legal history.
Number four, the number of years that country was under Marxist rule.
And the number of the population that are males between the ages of 15 and 24.
And finally, the number of concert halls per 1 million persons.
So this isn't a perfect system by any stretch of imagination, but it tracks with what we know about Scandinavian history, demographics, and culture. And you can read the full analysis over there at Invisible Oranges, as well as the paper published in Metal Music Studies.
Really interesting, right? So if we break some of this stuff down, if you have a percentage of a population that identifies at least as Catholic, then another significant portion of a population that identifies as having no religion, you can see how there could be some people at odds there. When you throw in the latitude of the country, what at least this is what I'm inferring, is that you're bringing in how warm generally and how humid the climate is in any given country. And also, you know, depending on the elevation in the area where people are located. I wonder if you should have put elevation in there somewhere. That would have been fascinating. But, you know, then the other ideas of just literally saying, does it have a Scandinavian legal history? Fascinating. And then the whole Marxist rule thing. I don't know. I want to learn more about that, so I'm going to go back and read some more about that later. But for now, let's just keep going on here, because we've pretty much established what metal is, a little bit at least. And we also know that metal itself, several versions of it, is supremely popular within the Scandinavian countries that we mentioned above. Sweden, Finland, Norway.
Yet in the States, in the U.S. and abroad, it's always kind of had a bit of a controversial image, right? So during the Satanic Panic in the U.S., heavy metal music along with Dungeons and Dragons were both cited as contributing factors in everything from violent assaults like the child murders at Robin Hood Hill.
Yeah.
Those guys were all metal fans, and they were sort of railroaded because of that fact alone. And, was implied that because they listened to heavy metal music, they were participating in some sort of satanic rituals. Which brings us to another factor, the rise of devil worshiping, or the perceived rise of devil worshiping during that period, and property damage and more.
And it's crazy there because things range from annoyances, like property damage and riffraff coming around here, listening to their heavy metal music and messing up my garbage cans, to literally murder. That's at least the perceived stuff going on here from portions of the U.S. population. And just to add to all that stuff, anything culturally that becomes a little bit popular that is contrary to some of the powers that be would wish the established culture would be. I don't know if that even tracks as making sense to anyone listening out there, but anytime something is a little outside of the regular thing, especially when it comes to religions the popular religions in an established area, it can be viewed, I think, that it's seen as anti-establishment. And a lot of times, these movements are meant specifically to be anti-establishment or anti-norm, I guess. Now, in Scandinavia, particularly in Norway, there is a genre that we've kind of mentioned here called black metal. And this, in particular, was cited as the cause of an intense anti-Christian terrorist campaign. That's right, an anti-Christian terrorism campaign. And black metal was cited as being a part of a conspiracy to protest the country's dominant religion through the act of literally burning down the most sacred sites of people's faith in Norway, churches. Now, here's a big question. Was this true? Was black metal truly to blame for this conspiracy to burn down churches across Norway? We're going to explore that, and we're going to talk about reasons that it may have just been a little bit of propaganda at the hands of media in the vicinity in Norway to fight back against some anti-establishment movements. But we're going to find out. So let's move forward. Here's where it gets crazy.
Right here?
Right here.
All right. I'm ready for it.
I feel like I just set up all that stuff as in, we're going to find out, we're going to do this, we're going to check into it. Well, guess what? We already researched it. We're in here recording it right now. And it's absolutely true that black metal itself in some way had to do with this conspiracy to burn down churches in Norway.
Between 1992 and 1996, no less than 50 successful or attempted church burnings were attributed to musicians and fans of the black metal scene in Norway. So CNN describes black metal in this way, and this is very, very good description. Black metal is a subgenre of heavy metal music that typically takes on anti-Christian, satanic, and paganistic themes. Black metal songs typically have a fast tempo. They're called blast beats. And they feature shrieking. I've always referred to them as kind of witchy vocals, like like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also heavily distorted guitars, more so than just like your metal zone pedal. You know?
Yeah.
Any guitarists out there
a lot
in
of
the
times...
audience might remember the Boss Metal Zone.
Yes.
Classic metal, good distortion.
It's more of a wall of
it's a absolute crushing wall of distortion. Yeah. like static almost.
Yeah.
Like it's bordering on atonal, but then there are shreddy riffs and lead licks and everything like that. And unconventional song structure. So lots of weird time signatures, tempo changes, things like that. And some of the big bands in that scene. The term black metal actually comes from the British group Venom, who was one of the most influential black metal bands. And there were other acts like Bathory, Mayhem, Barzum, Immortal, Emperor, and my personal favorite, Gorgoroth, whose lead singer plays a big part in some of these stories.
Yeah.
So it's important to note that these acts of church burning or vandalism, property damage, what have you, they could be actually considered acts of domestic terrorism with one unified aim – and that is to protest the very existence or, you know, the hegemony, the kind of dominance of Christianity in Scandinavia, a country that was founded on a pagan or Odinist kind of set of beliefs and then sort of taken over by Christian beliefs. And these churches very much represent that hegemony and that kind of, you know, other force that kind of comes in and maybe steers the history of this part of the world away from their more, you know, kind of the Viking type roots.
It's interesting to see it as almost cultural vengeance against that kind of thing, or, you know, taking back the power of the history in some way. It certainly doesn't excuse the acts in any way, but it is interesting to see it in that light. So let's jump to the documentary Satan Rear Media, Satan Rides the Media.
Okay.
And in it, prominent members of Norway's black metal scene are asked about
what's happening. Oh, that's the
translation.
Satan Rear Media means in English, Satan Rides the Media. I got it.
Yeah,
that's
not
like a subtitle.
Oh, apologies. Yeah, I should have specified that. Yeah. It's we would call it here, and Nolan and I would call it Satan Rides the Media.
That's right.
So they take the Norway's black metal scene. They asked a bunch of people about these instances of church arson. And inside it, there's a guitarist named Jorn Ing Tunsberg, and he was convicted for a church arson, and he answers, or at least considers this question by saying, quote, "The reason behind burning Asain Church was that Norway is always so moral, Christian morals. Rules and regulations are always religious. The more Christian, the more you hate it. You understand that Norway should not be Christian." Like, as in, you understand who he's speaking to. You understand that Norway should not be Christian. And then he says, "And that is the reason for burning Asain Church." It's A-S-A-N-E, church. "The point is very symbolic, really." So it kind of gets to what we're talking about. It's a reaction to something that they view as improper.
So this other fellow named Varg Vikernes, who was imprisoned for charges including the murder of a fellow black metal musician named Euronymous. Euronymous was in a band called Mayhem, and Vikernes was in a band called Barzum. He was also imprisoned for the charges of burning down three churches and the attempted arson of a fourth. So this is how he responds to this notion of what Christianity means to him as a native Norwegian. Quote, "The church has behaved so disgracefully, basely and cruelly in Norway. It's incredible. When they talk about Satanism, when someone burns a church, they ought to look to themselves and remember all the sacred places they have burnt, they being the Christians, and ruins on top of which they have built their churches."
Wow. Again, that whole thing just feels like metal lyrics. They have a point there, right? When you think about the Crusades, you think about the things that the most popular religions in the world have done as a large group. Certainly isn't to vilify any of the individuals, right? But as institutions over time for hundreds and hundreds of years, many of them have done some fairly horrific things. So if you look to other documentaries and interviews, you'll hear black metal musicians offer similar things. As a gentleman named Gaal, G-A-A-H-L. His real name is Christian Eivind Espedal.
He's the guy that's in Gorgoroth.
That's the dude. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
That's the dude. And in Metal, A Headbanger's Journey, this dude unapologetically expresses his support of church burnings. And it's kind of unsettling because he also expresses his desire to see more church burnings. Let's just burn them all. And here's his quote.
He says, "Church burnings and all of these things are, of course, things that I support 100%, and it should have been done much more and will be done much more in the future. We have to remove every trace from what Christianity and the Semitic roots have to offer this world. Satanism is freedom for the individual to grow and to become Superman. Every man who is born to be king becomes king. Every man who is born to be a slave doesn't know Satan."
Whoa.
You kind of get a pretty serious sense that he is literally anti-Semitic, because he's talking about how the Semitic roots in, you know, religion and culture are inherently a bad thing. And he's kind of espousing some, like, almost Nietzschean kind of, like, the same things that Hitler would have talked about as far as, like, you know, becoming the Superman. And
yeah,
there is very much a kind of Aryan flair to what he's saying.
Yeah. Well, and here in, you know, we've had several examples here at this point of people either supporting or at least lending a tiny bit of support to these church burnings that were occurring in Norway and in Scandinavia. And it's easy to maybe think, oh, well, then everybody in the black metal scene has this view. The black metal as a genre, as a music, and as a culture means that it's anti all of this stuff, and church burnings, they would view church burnings as a good thing. But you have to remember, that doesn't mean, just because we have three or four, doesn't mean that the whole thing is monolithic. It doesn't mean that all the musicians and fans support this practice. But it is, you know, something in the wheelhouse of what we were wanting to explore when we set out to do this episode, which is, can music itself or the culture surrounding a music influence us and influence our actions? And when I say us, I mean everybody, anybody. Could it? And at least it appears in this way that the shared outlook or in motivation for a lot of this type of music does seem to be steering at least quite a few of the people involved in it in a certain direction. But again, if you tried to say all of black metal is doing this at all times, it would be like saying all fans of hip hop or whatever, anyone who's ever attempted to freestyle a verse are 100% on board with drive-by shootings. Which is one of the stupidest things you could say, and I feel dumber for even mentioning it.
Don't feel that way, Matt.
But
it needed to be said.
It's an equivalency.
Yeah, and furthermore, it seems that the supporters of church burnings are themselves not a united front in the first place. Some folks like Varg Vikernes seem to argue in favor of what they see as a culture war. In his blog post, Vikernes argues that the conflict between pre-Christian Norway and modern Christianity is similar to the fear and conflict between some modern Europeans and Islamic culture. It should also be noted that the core of Vikernes' beliefs are rooted in racial ideology, which is also seems to very much be the case for Gaul.
Yeah, you definitely see the echoes there. Now, there are others involved with this stuff who are not a part of the black metal scene. Lone actors outside of Norway who may simply be disaffected, isolated people. Overwhelmingly, the people who took part in this were young men, and perhaps they were just seeking an outlet for some inner rage, some personal conflict, some conflict that they see as a wider thing, but it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what we've been speaking about prior to this.
So it follows then that the original waves of church burnings were based on this kind of religious fanaticism, the idea that pre-existing North mythological beliefs were the true creed of the region, and that Christianity had to be uprooted and driven from the land in its entirety. So the association with a Christian Satan therefore doesn't make a whole lot of sense in that context, right? Why would a religious fanatic commit an act of violence in the name of a supernatural being that his or her actual religion doesn't even acknowledge?
That is pretty weird, right? We were talking about that a little bit off mic, just how in order to truly believe in some kind of religious Satanism, you would have to essentially take or be a Christian but just an anti-Christian. Rather than have another view. It's really strange.
So denying the idea of Christianity would also make it where you would have to deny the existence of Christian Satan or Lucifer. So there'd be no reason whatsoever in this frame of thought for Satan to exist, much less to be supported by physical acts of violence. Fun fact, how much of a cultural supremacist is Vikernes? Well, he actually refers to Christianity as a, quote, immigrant religion. How racist is he? He constantly complains that the character based on him in the fictional film Lords of Chaos is a, quote, fat Jew. This guy is kind of a hot garbage person.
That is unfortunate that person has those beliefs and says those things. Okay, so we're gonna take another quick word from our sponsor, and then we're going to come back with our conclusions and what we've found here. We're back. So the question remains, how much of the Satanism that's extolled in black metal, at least at the time that the church burnings were happening, was genuine? How much of it was ideological, or how much of it was true theistic Satanism that we've talked about before on the show? And how much of it was more or less window dressing or PR meant to provoke and garner attention? Because remember, these are musicians. They have bands. They have obligations, a lot of times to sell a certain number of records. And you need to get your name out there. This is certainly one way to do it, but you could also wind up in jail, which would probably be a bad call. But we do know that there were true believers in the Scandinavian black metal scene. Euronymous, this guy that we've talked about earlier, he was often credited as one of the primary founders of the actual satanic movement. He described himself as a theistic Satanist.
Exactly. In an interview by Asa Lafinpera for Kill Yourself magazine, it's a charmingly titled magazine, Euronymous put his beliefs in this way. Quote, "I believe in a horned devil, a personified Satan. In my opinion, all the other forms of Satanism are bullshit. I hate that some people think up idiotic ways of making eternal peace in the world and dare to call it Satanism, like so many do. Satanism comes from religious Christianity, and therefore it shall stay. I'm a religious person, and I will fight those who misuse his name. People are not supposed to believe in themselves and be individuals, be individualists. They are supposed to obey, to be the slaves of religion." I think he's being tongue-in-cheek here. I don't know.
I know. It seems like so much of it.
Sounds like he's being a smart aleck.
It seems like so much of it is just a commentary. It's cultural commentary. But again, in a way, these are artists, right? These are people who are massively creative when they make music, when they, you know, decide what their band's gonna look like, what the stage is gonna be like, what the album cover is gonna look like. It certainly isn't hard to imagine that there's also some creativity happening here when you're speaking with a magazine such as this. But, you know, to this day, long after Euronymous's murder, remember, this was a whole other thing.
Right, by Varg Vikernes.
Yeah, people argue about how much of his image, Euronymous, how much of it was sincere and how much of it was truly attention-seeking or, you know, posturing or, again, kind of an act on purpose to be a part of the stage show and a part of the version of himself that exists within his music.
And yet none of this stuff, none of these realizations are going to unburn any churches. So there it is. There was, in fact, an active conspiracy to burn churches in Norway in the 1990s. But however coordinated these attacks might have seemed to outsiders, the reality is they were motivated by a number of different, at times, completely contradictory reasons, right?
Yeah, you're talking about religious fanaticism led some people to set fire. Others appeared to be attention seeking. They seem to be displaying provocative behavior on purpose for a different reason.
Yeah, some acceptance seeking or proving themselves to be part of a group of isolated loners, which is really interesting to, like,
right?
I'm part of this group of isolated people. It's like counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, but again, it makes sense in another way. And, you know, they're also cultural and ideological and sometimes racial supremacists that were in play there, as we saw at the end. But as for a true, you know, shadow of Satanism that's looming over Scandinavia, we still have to ask ourselves, in the end, how much was true Satanism on the part of the individuals involved? There were some, but we can't prove much more than that. How much of this whole thing was influenced by the media coverage, by a bit of hysteria? I mean, there are a lot of churches burning around in a fairly short period of time. That could be pretty scary, and it would also cause people to turn on their TVs and watch a news station and buy newspapers.
Yeah, and how many of these incidents were just attempts to get attention? More than 20 years later, these questions kind of still remain.
And I don't know how we're truly going to get rid of all of them, but we do know there's more to look at here, and perhaps we'll continue down this rabbit hole a little bit, you know, at a later date. But for now, we're going to leave it at that. Churches were burned, for sure, and enough people within the black metal scene in Norway and the rest of Scandinavia, enough people seem to be in on it and happy about it.
Yeah, I'm willing to talk about it. There's a really interesting documentary called Before the Light Takes Us.
Yes.
That is about all of this stuff. Really interesting. Goes into great detail about the feud between Barzum and Mayhem and that murder and how that kind of fed into this scene and a lot of the kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, identity politics behind this stuff. Mm-hmm. Because it was these kind of factions about, like, who could be more evil and who, you know, was more a true believer. But even within that, there is a lot of posturing. And I mean, you know, these, we haven't really even talked about this, these black metal artists, they wear corpse paint. And yeah. I have a very, which is white makeup and, you know, kind of runny black eye, like liners around their eyes, sort of looking almost like King Diamond, that the artist or whatever, or like Sting, the wrestler, kind of like that.
Yeah.
I have a very distinct memory of a really great article, because a lot of this happened when I was a kid. It was in Spin magazine, and it interviewed a handful of like kind of like big figures in the Scandinavian black metal scene, and I remember one of them like had a decaying crow that he kept in a bag, and every time he would like perform, he would like sniff the decaying crow in the bag so that he had the smell of death in his nostrils. So I mean, there's definitely a drive among some of these folks to be very authentic and to absolutely, I don't know, for lack of a better term, practice what they preached, and some of that involved burning down churches.
Yeah, and sniffing crows. That is just, that's a way to win me over if you're ever in my presence. Just sniff a decaying crow, and I'll know, hey, we're on the same page, buddy.
Hey, for sure. Are you on the same page with us about this topic? What are your thoughts on black metal? What's your favorite genre of music? What's your favorite subgenre of metal?
Yeah, and how has music influenced your life over the years? Do you think music is powerful enough to make people take actions and do things? Are there other examples of that occurring in the past? Or is that something that media and, you know, in our attempt to categorize and make sense of things, is that something we came up with on our own? Maybe music can't actually make us do anything, or video games or movies or TV or culture. Maybe that's all part of something bigger, the circumstances that we find ourselves in.
You can connect with us on our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy. All you have to do is name me, Matt, or Ben, or, you know, just say something clever, and we'll let you in for sure.
What was it? It was special guest super producer. No, special Seth.
Seth Metal.
Seth Metal. Super producer Johnson.
Yeah, I think that was it. We can review the tapes.
Okay. All right.
So there's a record of this. If you don't want to do that, you can hit us up on Instagram or regular old Facebook, where we are Conspiracy Stuff or Conspiracy Stuff Show. Isn't that right? Isn't it on Instagram's Conspiracy Stuff Show?
Correct.
Yeah.
And what's your Insta?
Oh, you can find my Insta at How Now Noel Brown. You know, it's just me doing, farting around, doing stuff, sniffing dead crows.
And being adorable.
I'm being adorkable. Thanks, bud. I appreciate that. If you don't want to do any of that internet-y stuff, you can give us a call on our hotline, which we have, which is 1-833-STDWYTK. And if none of that floats your boat, you can send us – oh, wait. No, here's another thing you should do. You should check out Movie Crush, which is a show that I'm on occasionally, and Matt was just on discussing the original Matrix.
That's right.
Yeah.
I talk, man, it was so much fun. I am so jealous that you get to hang out with Chuck in a room alone several times a week.
Things, hey, you make it sound very, very sinister.
No,
in a room, a windowless room alone with Chuck Bryant.
It's similar to the joy I get from hanging out with you and Ben in a darkened room alone, albeit with the three of us. But with Chuck, I mean, he's just a delight. I think you would agree with that. He's just a cool dude, as you are. And we got to chat Matrix for way too long.
And by the time this episode is out, your Matrix episode should be live in the world for folks to check out.
It's already out there, man.
No way.
Yeah.
All right. Check it out now. And if you don't want to do that, well, no, then you're, what's wrong with you? You should do that. you can just send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.